one of the guys was like, oh, no, we're not a broadcast. And he kind of sort of pulled out one of those sort of badges that you have around your neck, and he was like, I'm a police sniper.
And I was like, oh, right.
Lovely, okay. Nice one.
A bit concerned they were only just rocking out the day before. I thought he'd have had a spotlight, you know, already saw it.
Hello and welcome to Carry On Swearing. I'm your host, Jake Parker, and I've got an incredible guest with me today. He is a multi-award winning, that's a lie, but welcome, Nick. Welcome to the podcast, mate.
Hello, Jake. Thanks for having me.
No worries.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, man. Good. I'm happy to have you. So the purpose of the podcast, obviously, is to help people get into the industry, not just film and TV, music, writers, everything in the media industry, really. But the reason why I brought you on is because you have a unique story about how you got into the industry. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
A unique story. It's great that you think it's unique. I think most people probably do end up going a similar route to maybe how I got in, or maybe even how you got in. I think you do a particular course. I did a particular course, TV production at University of Gloucestershire. And when that finished, you know, I mean, during the course, I was doing a little bit of freelancing, a little bit of TV work. But when that finished, there wasn't a huge amount of work lined up. Probably a fault on my part, but also, you know, there's so many people going into the industry, into TV and film every year. And also it was kind of the start of COVID as well. So it wasn't a perfect time. And so, you know, I was somebody who very much just constantly tried to find opportunities, keep contacts across the industry. During COVID, I ended up doing some free work on a COVID-19 documentary. That was like pre-commission, so it hadn't been commissioned. It was kind of a piece of work that somebody was trying to pitch to broadcasters. It kind of never really got picked up, but it did get turned into an art piece. But that was great because I learned a lot of skills from it. And long story short, I ended up getting a job in London at a sort of big international charity, which kind of, I guess, was the start of my proper media career. But I always tell people it's a little bit like stepping stones. Everything you do, it's kind of gets you to the next step. And, you know, that's really important, more so than any qualification, I'd say. It's also the experience that you get and the people you meet along the way.
Well, that's it. That's the podcast. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. So let's start from the beginning. So why do you want to get into film and TV?
That's a really good question. I don't actually know why. I probably couldn't tell you to this day why. As you well know, I used to want to be a chef. I also don't know where that started, but there was just a desire to want to go in and create something. So maybe there's a link there. And also, you know, now I love being in really high pressured situations. And so you kind of look at it, there's a similarity between wanting to work in a kitchen and making stuff in a pressured environment in a kitchen. And I guess doing what I do now.
Yeah, of course.
I've never really thought about it that way before. and I did like a 6-month placement in like a 4-star restaurant, and I really enjoyed it. But by the end of it, I kind of realized that wasn't what I wanted to do. I didn't really want to spend my life in a place like that. And then after that, I kind of started doing media studies, which you were already doing. So it's kind of an easy way. And I guess, you know, I kind of knew someone who's kind of doing the course.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think at that point, I was like, okay, I want to go into writing or directing. That's the path I want to take. And I'm not really doing that now, but I did really enjoy writing and directing things at uni and, you know, and up until what I'm doing now, I guess.
We both came from a very small town with not a lot of media background here. Mostly our town has restaurants, what we're famous for, and a race course, and etc. So not, and sports, you know, we got our own town football team. How has that kind of benefited you, or not benefited you, into going into the media industry?
I think I've always been someone who's relatively independent, and so I never really expected anyone to give me anything on a plate. You know, I definitely have, and I'm sure you have as well, met plenty of people who have connections in the industry, you know, the elder brother or uncle or aunt. Most of my friends had kind of people like that in the industry. I definitely didn't. I didn't know anybody who worked in the media industry, and I didn't mind that, and I still don't mind that to today. Like, I don't look back and think I was disadvantaged. It's just, that's just the case.
Yeah.
It just meant I had to work really hard to get in. And then obviously you start pursuing a career path, and you do slowly meet people along the way who might have had some experience. And, you know, we started to meet a few different people, and then you've just got to prove yourself, and then they give you opportunities over time.
Yeah.
And you, like I said, you just got to keep chasing them. And I think that's kind of it. You just have to work hard for what you want. And if the connections aren't there, then you've just got to make them. Or you give up, you know, that's the other option.
Well, you could give up. Yeah. That's not the idea of the podcast. Let's not promote that. Okay, we're not here to give up.
Give up.
I got a question actually from a student from All Saints Academy, but they've actually asked, your first ever video that you've ever edited, do you still use it in your portfolio?
No, obviously not. That's a terrible video. And I encourage anybody to take out their first ever video. I also don't know what my first ever video was. It would have been something I'd have done in my bedroom. That sounds a bit odd.
I used to use Windows Movie Maker to learn how to cut.
Classic.
Because it was the only editing software I had access to. Super, super simple. You know, a couple of transitions. You can have a couple of different video tracks and audio tracks. But it kind of teaches you how to... yeah, put a story together. And that's something I've always told people, like, it doesn't matter what software you have access to. I mean, you know, I sound like a really old man saying this, but nowadays there is so much choice. Things like TikTok and CapCut and all the available softwares on your phone. You know, we didn't have that when we was younger. And so Movie Maker was my tool to learn how to edit. And I think really that was just because, I don't know, I'd either film something or whatever. I don't know what it was, but I just thought, let me just try and cut this together. And then I found a little bit of passion for that. And yeah, so I don't know what the first video I'd have edited was. It would have been some, you know, film I made on my phone. I do remember making this kind of Jurassic... I had a load of, like, toy dinosaurs and made this little Jurassic Park film. Edited that on Movie Maker. It was great. It was great. I don't know where it is now, but...
Did you do a song?
Yeah,
did
but it is nice to look back at those... I don't know what the song was. I think it was a song from Reservoir Dogs.
I was saying to someone the other day that it's really important to keep those things, or at least maybe not, you know, the very first things you make, but... keeping kind of track of the projects you've worked on, you know, at school, at university, maybe even your first freelance gig, you know, not necessarily to show to anyone else, but it's great to look back on when you are doing something really successful, and you could be like, well, you know, I can kind of see my craft building here. That's really important.
Of course.
And it's quite fun to do sometimes.
Absolutely.
And also, you can see the skills you've learned and, you know, where you've developed and where you went wrong previously.
Speak about university. I have a lot of questions about university, and people keep asking me, did I go and study? Is it worth studying? How did I get into the industry? And I don't always have this the right answer, because we both had different experiences at university. I feel like it really didn't benefit me in my studies, but maybe benefited me as a person. How did you take university?
I bloody loved university, which is a struggle sometimes when a lot of people didn't. I had the best time ever. Both like academically and also just like I said, outside of that, there was opportunities to just to create projects and you know, it was a place where you obviously grow as a person. There are so many new opportunities out there to explore. But also, I thought the course I did was exactly what I wanted. I had this sort of thirst for knowledge about an industry I kind of knew nothing about, and was able to kind of learn and then put into practice everything that I kind of wanted to know and to try out. And I feel so grateful that I got that opportunity. And then the more experienced you get, you know, opportunities come in to go and film things here and there. You know, we got the opportunity to go in. I produced and directed this sort of BBC Radio Gloucestershire 30th anniversary music video with Eddie the Eagle and a couple of other people sort of around Gloucestershire, which, you know, is a really cool opportunity when you're a student and to put things into practice.
Yeah.
So there was the BBC video, but then also, you know, off the back of that, you know, we kind of also decided we wanted to run our own esports event. Toby and I, a friend of mine and an old housemate of mine, used to work at Insomnia Gaming Festival, which is or was the UK's biggest gaming festival. And we kind of got inspired to do something like that ourselves. Hadn't been done before. It's a massive technical challenge. You know, almost all of the lecturers told us it wasn't going to be possible. And it was a lot of hard work. Become very close to kind of giving up and quitting, but
yeah, of course,
we did it in the end, and it was amazing. Kind of 3-month live stream feat that ended in a cross university esports challenge day. You know, raising a couple grand for charity. But really cool at the time, challenging ourselves and learning new skills.
Yeah, absolutely. So inspiration. I like to mention inspiration a lot, and about how certain people in my life inspired me to get into film and TV. So when I was younger, I was inspired more by TV programs like Doctor Who, Marvel and Disney. And that kind of, I was brought up on film and TV. So I wanted to always get into film and TV. But when I got older, my desire to be an actor disappeared to become more of a filmmaker. And when I went into sixth form, I wasn't really academic. So I wanted to get into film, but didn't have the resources to do so. So I had help from a lovely person at All Saints called Kerry Edgar. She was a delight, helped me out a lot.
Oh yeah, I think I know her.
You think you know her? She's all right. She's quite a lovely person. And I had a couple of teachers help as well. Naomi Austin, again, another lovely person. And of course, Keith Wright. They all helped me out during my studies because I was really struggling. And I knew that I was more creative than academic. But how about yourself? Was anyone that actually inspired you as well? Were you inspired by TV and film, or?
I don't think I was ever. I guess inspired is a broad term. I don't think that I can remember right now, pinpoint somebody who was like, yes, I want to follow their path. I was just determined to do it because I watched programs and thought I'd want to create something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I felt supported and encouraged by people I knew who were in the industry who was able to support us. Obviously, you mentioned Kerry, and ultimately she was the key person in terms of giving us the opportunities, right? And that's important. You get the opportunities and you learn through those opportunities. So yeah, 100% encouraged. I don't think I ever felt inspired to follow someone's route.
Do you remember when I dropped Kerry's camera on the floor and you blamed me for it? Even
when we were filming and it fell forward in front of everybody. Yeah.
But you went straight away. You didn't take the blame at all. You put me the blame straight away. Because Jake was in charge.
I'm not taking the blame. I'm not paying for that camera.
You mentioned Kerry, and we mentioned now that All Saints, and of course that's where we studied. But do you feel she gave us quite a few different opportunities to kind of broaden our creativity? Were you proud of any of those projects? Do you feel like that helped you?
I think it, going on location and working with clients was a big one, right? Working as a professional, professional in quotation marks, we were working for free, but that's fine. I also don't think there's a problem with working for free at the beginning, but we can come on to that.
Yeah.
But going out and exploring opportunities, trying to keep some kind of schedule, thinking about what shots you need because someone's told you they want this kind of edit it was really, really fun. And ultimately, a good learning ground, which is so important in your early stages to have that space to create without the risk or fear of going wrong or you not getting paid. So that's why I kind of encourage that, really. If you can find those opportunities, then jump on them.
You mentioned about working for free. That sounds quite discouraging. I don't want to work for free, but why is that a good thing?
I think you're right. It definitely does sound, there's a lot of contention in the working for free space.
Yeah.
And I definitely don't encourage it if you are someone who has a skill set that should be paid for. I'm not saying, at your stage, definitely not, Jake, you shouldn't be working for free at all.
No.
There will be times when I might occasionally work for free if I think I will benefit from it. I'm mainly talking about if you're at school or university, early days of university, when you are maybe still building out your skill set and might not feel comfortable charging somebody for your services. So I can only talk about my own experience, but at school and the first half of my first year of university, I did some work for free because I definitely wasn't confident enough in my editing or filming abilities. I don't even know really how would I go about charging for this. How much do I charge? I had no idea. And so you kind of get offered a job and you're like, oh, I'll do it for free because I'm still learning, I'm still benefiting. And then it got to a point, like I said, about halfway through the first year, and I was like, actually, I think I can charge for this. Not extortionate rates, it was quite low, low salaries to begin with, but because I didn't have the skill set, and there's also not as much pressure if you're doing it for free, because you can fuck up. And so, if you think you're really good at what you do, then absolutely charge for it. And also make sure you don't get taken advantage of. If you've done a job for somebody a few times and you're not being paid, maybe it's time to sort of, walk away from that opportunity or even ask for more money.
Of course.
What about you? What do you think on it?
I feel like if you get an opportunity to work on something that is a placement, go for it. It builds character and it builds experience. But when you get to a level that where me and Nick is, and this is what I was going to mention earlier about the different sectors we work in and how much experience we both have in different things. I feel like you shouldn't work for free. It's like someone comes up to you and goes, I need a costume designer, and you've been working costume for 10 years, but it's free and it's just paid for travel. At that point, you're like, no, I'm not interested. Thank you. So I think it's based on skill and how long you've been doing it for as how much you should be asking for pay.
Yeah. If you can get paid for it, fucking take the pay. But if it's a volunteer opportunity or whatever it might be and it's free, don't always assume that you need to be paid for it because you're doing something. Like if you're benefiting, that is sometimes pay enough. If you're going to learn any skill set, that's pay enough. If it's a low level pay, I've done some jobs that are 50 quid for a full day's work and a couple of weeks editing. Yeah, I mean, I look back on that and I'm like, that should have been more money because there's a lot of work, but I got so much from that opportunity that I kind of feel like actually in the long run I've kind of benefited from it for sure. And then you kind of get something for your portfolio, right? And it's also about building out your portfolio and being able to walk into jobs to be like, these are the things I've worked on and this is kind of what I've been trusted with. It's also super important.
No, I agree. And I think, like I said, how are you going to get experience without having experience? People want you to have experience. Yeah. So how are you going to get that? You have to go out and find that experience. People aren't going to come to you. And this is one thing I have to teach people. Like, oh, I really want to work on Doctor Who, or I really want to work on Deadpool. I said, okay, well, go and reach out to someone. No one's going to come to you and go, do you want to work on it? Unless you're really big in the industry now and well known and people trust you. When you first start out, you have to email, you have to text, you have to phone call, or you're not going to have that opportunity. You really want to work on Doctor Who? Then make it happen.
And there's another level of this, and I've talked about this on a podcast I did a few years ago, but the industry, the media industry, and I'm sure a lot of other industries are too, but it's hugely nepotistic. A lot of it is based on who you know. A lot of companies obviously have you know, very specific diversity hiring policies in place, and you know, a lot of jobs are open for people in, you know, the general domain to apply to. But if you're working on like a freelance basis, for example, a lot of the time those opportunities are going to go to people already within those circles because they know they can be trusted.
Yeah.
And you have to understand, especially if it's fast turnaround, if it's TV or film, you know, a lot of the time they need people who can deliver, not necessarily at the lower levels. At the runner levels, I think there's quite a lot of opportunities to come in and work your way through. But, you know, I look up often, I look at things like BBC Natural History Unit and the camera operators they use. You know, I am not a high level camera operator by any means, but I'm sure they probably use the same kind of handful of people on those shoots because it's incredibly demanding work, and the budgets are insanely high, that they need people who know the industry, know the work, and can deliver without, you know, there's no space to fuck up on those shoots, right? So you just have to think how are you getting that experience, and what are you doing about it? Who are you approaching for work experience opportunities? Most people in the industry really want to help, and I think sometimes on the outside it can look like people don't care or they're not getting back to your emails. But a lot of the time people are very, very busy, but they also do want to help. I think we can all get inundated with emails. Like you say, you know, there's a reason why you're doing this podcast. You get a lot of messages. Can't get back to everybody. You know, there's a lot of work to be done, what we're being paid to do. Sometimes, especially when hiring for a certain position, there's the differences between, you know, one candidate and another can be very, very, you know, minute.
This is another thing, is that when people email you for opportunities, obviously we've both had people in message and go, how did you get in? How did you do that? But they also want you to give them work experience. Is that difficult? It's difficult for me.
Oh, definitely.
It is. And also, I do think it's hard because a lot of the time people just think they can maybe like dump multiple paragraphs about their background into your inbox and expect you to read it. And I'm not saying that I didn't do that, but I think I was... You know, I was probably quite conservative back then in terms of I wouldn't write it too much.
Yeah.
I've had so many emails and messages of, you know, it's almost their life history, and you just need to think about how is this other person going to receive this if they're in a busy job, you know. And I do read every message I get because I really enjoy it, and I, you know, I enjoy helping people where I can.
Of course.
Just, you know, the key thing is think about how you're approaching people. You're not the only person messaging them, and obviously they've got other things on, so. Make it really personal. I'm not saying write a personal message for everybody, but if you're messaging someone because you like their work, talk about the work that you like, talk about what you don't like. Otherwise, it comes across as really disingenuous, and it does seem like a copy-pasted message. You're looking for work experience at my company. Well, what specifically and why? You know, why are you going to get that opportunity? Oh, just because you've messaged. Unfortunately, it doesn't work like that either. And you have to remember, if you're doing work experience and you're messaging me, the work experience is going to be with me, and so I need to take time out of my day to do that work experience with you. And so you need to really kind of give a reason as to why that should be you.
Of course.
But I get it's hard. It's not easy. I that's what I was going to say earlier on. In that period between finishing uni, I think it was about a year between finishing uni and kind of getting my job in London. I was applying to jobs, you know, almost three times a day, you're messaging people almost every single day, and that really wears you down. So I get it's tough if you've just finished university, or even if you're in the industry and you're looking for work, it's really, really tough, and that can really, you know, knock your confidence.
I completely agree with you.
Know. Again, it's resilience. You have to keep going, and ultimately that's what I did, and yeah.
I was going to say, I get loads of emails as well that talk about, I might put a job out for a location marshal for a show like we're filming. I just need them for one day. And this is a great thing about on these Facebook groups and these Telegram groups, is that they always put out looking for new people to join. But I don't need you to write me a whole paragraph about why you'd be great for that day of working as a location marshal. I just need you to be like, I can do the day you've asked for. I live here. That's fine. I will tell you the rate, obviously, as being the advertisement. But I don't need you to send me a whole paragraph about why you love Doctor Who and why you should be on Doctor Who. I just need you to be like, I can do the job. This is the location I can get to. I can't drive, but I promise I'll be there. Or you can drive in, but more beneficial. Yeah.
I wonder if there's just an education piece around that, where, and maybe that's where university is really important, or maybe that, you know, there are spaces outside of university on how to apply for jobs. But, you know, I think once you've been in the industry for a while, you know how to write a relatively good CV, you know how to write a cover letter, and you know how to respond to jobs. And like you said, most of the time it's concise. You know, maybe talking a little bit about your experience, your skill set, and your availability, and maybe what you'd charge for the job. People who come in and don't approach it in that way are often seen as people who either haven't worked in the industry or are very junior, and also aren't respecting of the person who's posted the job's time, because, like we said, they're not really, you know, they're assuming they're going to read the whole message. So biggest tips is, you know, be professional, be concise, address them by their name. If you're able to mention any work, great. But if you're responding to a specific job, then yeah, it should be job focused.
I agree. How I started my journey is that I obviously applied for many, many jobs and then got an internship, but I went for a very bumpy road about how to get into the industry. I started with, by sleeping on your sofa, obviously. Good benefit if you know people who live in the town and you've just started a job. Give them a bit of rent, but also, which I never did, but, you know, hopefully ask for a help if you can and, you know, move forward. And I had a bit of a bumpy road into the industry by doing that. Then moving to London myself and other things happened. And then obviously walking 3 hours to get to a job because I was so passionate about it. Have you ever had that kind of struggle?
Well, I haven't. And I, you know, I do commend you obviously for that. That's incredible commitment. I used to worry, and I've said this, but I don't think that's a healthy way to approach anything. Like, if you're putting yourself at risk, you know, having to walk for ages to get to a place. Obviously, it's paid off, which is brilliant. And obviously, you know, no problem sleeping on my sofa. But yeah, you've got to be careful. You've got to make sure you're looking after yourself. Another thing I was told at university by someone who, you know, I think should have been a bit more trusting. You know, I got given the advice to say, you know, spend all your savings and sofa surf around London. And I think that's an incredibly damaging thing to say to somebody just to get into the industry. I mean, a lot of people don't have that kind of money. I certainly didn't have that kind of money. Any money I earned from my, like, baristering job, you know, kind of just went on paying rent in my house, giving rent to my mum. And, you know, obviously trying to save a little bit, but to finish university and think, I'm going to take all the money I've ever earned and spend it trying to make a life in London, I think is incredibly damaging. And there's a level of privilege, I think, that does come within the working in the industry. And if you know people in the industry, you know, or you know people who live in a certain area, there, that's a level of privilege. Like, you was able to sleep on my sofa, which is good. I'm not saying that's an ideal scenario, but you know, you have to be careful of the advice you're given and make sure it works for you, and make sure that you're looking after yourself also.
People ask me about how, not just about how you get in, but how you progress in a certain department. Now, I'm more freelance based, so I can't. It's hard. In a different way to progress from going from an AD runner to a third AD to a second AD. But how do you do that as an editor, senior producer?
Well, I don't know the answer, I'm afraid, because I'm still waiting for a promotion myself, so I cannot help you there. But it is...
Within a company, obviously, usually if you stay within a company, there will be opportunities to be promoted at some point. You'll work your way up the ranks, whether that's within your own team. You know, most teams, every position is filled within a team, right? So unless somebody above you leaves, you cannot move into that position. You're kind of reliant upon it on the team or the company creating a new position. Sometimes you might move sideways into a different department or a different brand. Or you might do a job for a number of years and then decide, okay, right, I'm at a junior level. I'm going to do this job for a number of years. And then you suddenly see, you know, a producer, if you're looking at a producer or whatever it is, or instead of junior editor, it's just editor at another company, and you decide to move into that. You know, really, you should be doing a job for a couple of years before you seek to get promoted. You want to be able to do your role for a number of cycles, not just for 6 months or 1 year. You need to be able to kind of do a whole year of events. So I think if you're based in-house, like I am, you've got a number of things that happen throughout the year, just generally in the world, but also within your company, and you need to be able to kind of handle a few of those before you even kind of consider promotion. I think that's really important, so that you know, okay, this is what I did last year, I'm going to make it better this year. So an example of mine would be Hearts Met Me a Millionaire, which is a really big production we do on the brand. You know, my first year at Heart, I joined in the last week, so I kind of saw the event. Then the following year, it was my first time to produce the event, and then just last year in May, it was my second time to produce the event. And you know, everyone said it was the best one yet, but it's because I've gone through a few cycles. I know what works and what doesn't work, and you know, there are still improvements to be made for next time. But you need to be in a role for a while before you consider moving out, because it just gives you that confidence to be like, I know this role inside and out. Yeah, but also you should be looking at another role, not when you're 100% ready to take it on, but probably when you're about 80%, right? You want to look at a role and be like, okay, this is going to challenge me. I'm not fully ready for this role, but yeah, I'm looking forward to doing something new. I'm going to throw my hat in the ring.
Fantastic. So we're now going to go into a bit more of a fun side of the podcast. Obviously, I always start off with the name of the podcast. It is called Carry On Swearing for a reason, because there's a lot of swearing on set. Now, we've had many people, many guests mention about the swear words they've heard, and because I'm in a different environment, my question for you, Nicholas, is what have you heard in the office or on a set?
I think we're quite a relaxed and, you know, open place, so you will hear all sorts, obviously. You know, a big component of what, you know, what I do in my day job is not my job, but we're a broadcast centre, right? So we're broadcast radio, so no swearing on air, obviously. I am someone who's probably swears quite a lot, but not necessarily in the workplace. I wouldn't ever dream of telling anyone to, you know, to fuck off or...
Or, what do you mean you didn't fucking record? I wouldn't ever do that. That sounds horrible. I don't think I'm a very sort of welcoming person to work with.
Yeah.
I think it just depends on, you know, the moments that you're in. Most of the time, there isn't a need to swear. It's usually when something goes wrong, right? I think if something goes wrong, you just feel really dejected. You feel really sad. So... yeah, it just depends. It depends. I think if something is, you know, usually if you're tight for time and something's wrong, you'll end up swearing. But ultimately, like, my job as a senior producer is then to find a solution. I haven't got time to start swearing. I've got to shut up and think of a solution. So, yeah, in my job, I tend to not swear too much, just because that would probably be not a great way to resolve a situation.
True, but you must have heard someone. You have to name the person. Obviously, I don't want names, but obviously, you must have heard someone swear that's maybe higher than you, or a professional, or an actor, or an actress.
Oh, 100%. Everyone swears, you know, a lot all the time. In every job I've been in, and, you know, whether it's planning calls, whether it's freelance work, you know, people are very frank and very open. And, you know, I'm not saying I put that down to the industry. I think everyone swears. You know, again, in kitchens, you hear it all the time, right?
Yeah, of course.
I think it's just, yeah, it's definitely probably a way of breaking the tension or being very frank, you know, is a big one.
Of course. And what is your favourite swear word that you like to use? I've already mentioned mine in another podcast, which is going to be cunt. I enjoy the word cunt, but how about you?
Interesting. I'd probably say fuck the most, yeah, fuck. Just by accident, yeah, as well. It's just if I've noticed something's going wrong, I'm like, oh, fuck.
Oh, fuck,
I do enjoy it when someone swears when you don't expect it, but you know, in a certain situation, and someone responds with a swear word, you're like, oh,
okay. That came out of nowhere. Nice. I love it. I love it when you're just on set and you hear it, you're like, oh, someone's pissed off. I just want to say fuck for a good reason. There you go. I just love it. I enjoy it.
It's a good way to break the ice.
It is. It's fun. I've done a deep dive onto your Instagram. As I mentioned to you, I do with all guests. And I enjoy it, but I've noticed that you've worked with so many big stars. I've worked with lovely Ollie Murs to Jamie Oliver. And what is one of your proudest moments, I would say? What's one of the best celebrities you've worked for, one of the proudest moments you've done?
I think my current job, at heart, you work with a lot of talent. And that's really enjoyable a lot of the time. You know, a lot of the time if I'm working with talent, I have a job to do, so you don't have time to kind of, you know, to fangirl.
Yeah.
And there are different levels of working with people, right? You know, there's different, you know, I've got a list on my phone of all the celebrities I've worked with, which I just keep as a record. I'll flick through them now. But there's a different level of working, right? So it's either I've edited something with them in, or I've shot them, filmed them. That's technical speak.
I've filmed them.
Or I've produced or directed them. Yeah, so that's kind of the difference there, I guess. I think one of my favourites so far is Pink, which is just over a year ago. I got to produce and direct and then edit a 45-minute sort of chat with Pink, who, you know, I used to really enjoy listening to her music as a kid. A lot of memories there, a lot of, sort of memories with the family. So for her to come in and for me to produce a segment with her was really cool. Likewise, when I used to want to be a chef, I was a big fan of Jamie Oliver, right? So that was really cool to sort of have a... You know, we did a couple minutes filming, and then we spent 10 minutes just talking, and that was really nice. And then you've got other names, like, you know, it's some other events, you know, just been able to, didn't talk to him, but just be able to kind of, you know, there's a big crew just sort of filming Stormzy, or, you know, we've worked with Lewis Capaldi a few times, and those fun moments where you see the humility in people.
Yeah.
And I think that's the other side of working with talent. It's, you get to see sort of them outside of their persona, and you realize everybody is just, you know, just a person.
See, you look in your phone, Nick. Can you name a couple of, apart from Pink and Lewis Capaldi, anyone else?
John Legend is quite cool. Someone I was really excited to work with was Will Ferrell a few Christmases ago. That was pretty magical. Really, really enjoyed that. Somebody who I remember being in my old job, my old charity job at One Young World, and I edited this video that got sent to like Bono's manager, and then I got this sort of message back being like, this is incredible, Bono's gonna love this. And I thought, that's bloody cool. That was like a big moment for me to be like, bloody hell, music legends, managers and would have seen this video I've edited, and that's a pretty cool feeling.
I'm a bit upset, obviously I'm not saying that anyone from your business is going to listen to this, but I'm a bit upset that you've not mentioned Amanda Holden or Pandora. You know, these two are, you know, so they're your favourites. I don't want to cause stir in the office, but...
Well, they're great to work with too, you know, they're brilliant, but they're almost like colleagues these days. It's different, you know, you're going to see them so often, it's kind of a member of the team. But, you know, when I first started, it was great to be able to be like, okay, we're kind of going to do this thing. And, you know, one of my favourite projects was doing the Three Peaks with Amanda Holden a few years ago as part of our challenge, a charity challenge. It was 24 hours to climb, you know, three mountains in the UK, and it was mega, it was intense, but it was certainly a bonding experience for everyone involved.
I've also seen that you've done some many big events, from Summertime Ball, the Winter Ball, and etc. What would you say is one of your...
Jingle Bell Ball.
The Jingle Bell Ball, my apologies. Didn't do my research well enough, apparently. But
no.
I said I was going to, and I must have completely forgot. But my question is what is one of your highest moments in your career so far from one of these events?
Millionaire is an incredible opportunity to work with, you know, a large budget and decide how something looks and feels and sounds and to kind of innovate on it. Like, that's something I really enjoy. I actually really enjoy managing a team. I think that's a really nice aspect. We have to kind of grow people and let them shine and let them experience and kind of push them in the directions they want to go. Freelancing for YMCA has been an incredible opportunity to work on some factual content, some factual documentaries, and have films shown at COP26 was an incredible opportunity. I'm trying to keep things quite varied, really, and I really enjoy where I'm at right now. So I don't want to rock the boat too much, because I do enjoy having the flexibility and freedom to kind of work across quite a broad range of projects. And actually, just saying that, you know, working at Global, you get to work across a huge array of different productions.
Yeah, of course.
You know, when it was the Queen's funeral, we got sort of pulled in to work with LBC, and, you know, we got to shoot her funeral procession opposite Westminster Abbey.
By film.
You used to say film.
it's a technical term. I'm sorry, that's what I say.
And that was an incredible opportunity, and I've got such a core memory of this. Of, you could hear the procession start with I think it was bagpipes from Parliament Square, which isn't too far from Westminster Abbey, all the way to Westminster Abbey, and you could hear it in the distance. And we were broadcasting from this balcony looking down, and you could hear as they got closer and closer, and you saw all these, you know, incredibly smart guards walk into the sort of the front of Westminster Abbey, and the coffin be, you know, taken off the carriage and taken in, and that everything went silent. It was an incredible moment, and you really think this is a moment in history, and you feel so grateful to be part of that.
So I've worked with quite a few big celebrities as well, from Ryan Reynolds to Hugh Jackman and Margot Robbie, which is an absolute honour to do. Have you ever... I've had a couple of issues with some big actors, if you will, big talent. You ever dealt with anything like that?
I think you've got to understand, you've got to be very compassionate.
Yeah.
When working with talent, I think it's easy from the outside to look in and assume that they must be living a great life, and, you know, they're sort of pampered, and, you know, not that that isn't true, but you just don't know the intricacies of their life. And, you know, I think when you come to working with celebrities, there's a bit more of a, I said it earlier on, but there's a humanization that happens where you kind of see them on and off camera. And ultimately, you know, everyone's shoving cameras in their face expecting them to perform, and I'd hate that life, and I'm so glad I don't have that life.
Yeah.
So I think there's a level of respect, and there's just a level of understanding that you kind of need to have when you're working with them. And not every experience is going to be great. You know, I understand that. But if you're going at it from a very sort of emotionally intelligent point of view, then you should be ending up with a good product. And if someone does turn around and they kind of, you know, you know, they're not having a good time, then it's your job as hopefully as a professional on that set or on that shoot to handle it responsibly. I've certainly had incidents where not the talent, but talent managers have gotten pretty, you know, unhappy with the crew that I'm with, and it's how you manage that, and you know, you've got to expect it to happen, and ultimately that's the job we're in. But you know, 99% of the time, everything's been really nice.
Amazing. I was about to say, didn't it still feel weird that we're both living in London now, and from this, like I mentioned earlier, the small town that we started off in?
You say small town. It's not that small. It's not a village. It's quite big for its media now, though, with all of its festivals. I think it's definitely come a long way. I think the student life has definitely helped that. It is weird to be in London, yes. Definitely here longer than I thought I would be, and no plans to leave anytime soon. It's a great place to find opportunities and meet people. Like, I've met so many people since being here, like in terms of just networking wise, it's quite a wonderful opportunity, and you know, all the different friends you make along the way, it's quite special.
Nice, thank you, buddy. I was going to say that actually the reason why I'm where I am today is because you inspired me. I mentioned Kerry earlier and other people, but actually because you got into the industry before I did, gave me that extra push to get in, because we both started off at the same level. We both wanted to get into film and TV. Obviously, you did a bit more editing, a bit more freelance than I did at the time. But because you got in and got into One Young World and went to London, it gave me the push to go, actually, that's where I want to be. How can I do that? So I spent day in, day out sending email after email and email. And this one thing that people do need to understand is that you will get disheartened when you have all the rejections you get, or the people that don't get back to you. And it's hard to keep that motivation and that positivity whilst you keep getting, no, sorry, not looking for anyone. Ah, sorry, you haven't got enough experience. Oh, no. So I think with that, you need to stay motivated during that period. But what I was trying to get is that actually you inspired me to get where I am to this day. And if it wasn't because of you getting in first, I don't think I would be where I am now.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, it's very kind of you to say, mate. And, you know, I would disagree with that. I think you're someone who's very self-motivated and determined anyway. Like, look at what you've done over the past few years. That's amazing. I do remember actually a phone call. I think I was on break during one of the Little Mix The Search audition shoots, and I think we had a phone call about the industry, and I just remember talking about, you know, constantly applying and trying and messaging people, and that's, you need that support, and you need to be able to talk to people when you're in those stages, because it isn't smooth sailing at all.
No,
I think you can look at people around you and be like, oh, they're in this position, and actually, you know, I would say 100% it's not luck that's got me to where I am, and it's not luck that's got you to where you're at. It's a huge amount of hard work that, you know, you, a lot of people won't really see.
No.
You know, not everyone posts about every step of their journey, and a lot of people have to work hard to get to where they're at. Maybe there's a certain level of privilege because, I don't know, we are white men. I mean, I do understand there's a lot of inequalities in the creative industries as well that need to be addressed more so than they currently are. But ultimately, you know, my story and your story, it's hard work. It's not, we didn't fall into a job.
No.
It's persistence, isn't it?
It is. It's persistence, and I absolutely agree. And I think where we are now, like, I'm not saying this is where you are now is where you want to be. I think you are happy where you are now. I'm not speaking for your story, but I knew that when I first started out, it was a lot of hard work. And like I mentioned, it's like a lot of traveling back and forth London. I still do it now. I work for a company called Ideal World, as a producer, for a shopping TV, and that didn't happen overnight. It happened, you know, it took years and years and years of work to get to the position to call myself a producer. And I know that, you know, it's a lot of hard work. And when I first started out, it was on No Time to Die as James Bond, and then Argyle. I think I mentioned, like, sleeping on your sofa and walking hours and hours. But I think you have to be committed to it. If you want to get into this industry, I think you need to not put yourself out there, like you said, don't harm yourself. You're not there to harm yourself. And I'm not saying my story is correct. I'm just saying that's what I did to get where I was. What I'm saying is, though, is that if someone asks you, can you be on set at 6 o'clock in the morning? Don't rock up at 7 o'clock. If you need to go and get the director of tea, don't complain. Just go and do it. You need to put the hard work in to get where you want to be.
Absolutely. Humility is everything. And if you're coming out as a runner, but at university you were directing all the time, well, unfortunately you're a runner now. And, you know, it doesn't mean you can't have ideas, and it doesn't mean you can't talk to the directors, and it doesn't mean you can't direct outside, but know your level. You know, you don't leave university and start trying to get jobs as a director, because there's still a huge amount to learn. A really nice motto we have at Global as part of the video team, I say motto, but it's kind of, we all carry kit, And that goes from the production assistants up to the, you know, the most senior members of staff. You know, I would never expect anyone to pack down, you know, unless it's already been agreed, to pack down my kit for me while I sort of lounge around or go on break. You know, if we're on a shoot together, everyone gets involved to pack down the kit and move the kit. It might be because I'm a team leader, I need to then go off for a meeting or delegate responsibility, but no one is above moving, shifting, packing down kit, because that's the most basic thing in on a shoot, right? And it's nice to look around and be like, okay, everyone is involved in setting the shoot up, everyone is involved, it was responsible really for the success of the shoot and also for the packing down at the end of the day. You don't just run off. And that's something that I think you should carry with you for your whole career. You need to have humility, no matter how junior or senior you are. You're lucky enough to be on a shoot together. You have to work with each other and treat each other with respect.
I agree. There's one motto I've learned, is that I would never ask someone to do something I couldn't do. For example, if there's I'm working in props and I need to ankle grind this boat and cut something out, or I need to drill something, I would never ask a trainee or someone to do something that I couldn't already do. So if I knew I could do it and I did it at that base level of a trainee, then I expect them to do it because it's a very simple task to do. What would you give someone advice if they want to get into editing? Obviously, we've gone different paths. You are a senior producer and editor for Heart, but obviously you were an editor to start off with, and that was your passion goal, if I remember correctly, back in university.
I don't know. I've ever wanted to be an editor. I definitely don't want to be an editor. Like, I wouldn't want a career in just editing. That's, I think, lucky about what I get to do is I get to do a bit of everything.
I'd never want to specialise. Definitely never want to specialise as an editor.
Yeah.
Advice for editing is really, really hard. I was talking to this with a student last week, and it is finding little opportunities. And editing is so hard because everyone is an editor these days. That's what I was saying earlier on. Like, the access to tools is, you know, you can edit on your phone now. Doesn't mean you're a good editor. I mean, it doesn't mean you're a great editor. You know, people who can edit on TikTok do some incredible work. But a lot of the time, if you're going to be editing, you know, for a production house, you need to at the very basic level, know how to cut together a good story, and know, you know, the importance of pacing and music choices. You might be able to do some, you know, crazy quick cuts and transitions that ain't going to cut it on every job. Nobody wants transitions across all of their videos, right? So just really think about the storytelling behind it. And level up your skills from there. I guess wider advice is take any opportunity that comes your way if it serves you. That's something I've always lived by from sixth form to now. If there's an opportunity that excites you and it's going to serve you and you're going to grow from it, and say yes to it, even if you're scared. I've said yes to so many opportunities that I've been terrified of. Even moving jobs, moving from One Young World to global, you know, you leave a safe space to go to the unknown, and it's very easy to stay in your comfort zone. But we don't, you know, there's that great quote where you know, nothing grows in the comfort zone, and that's true. And what's scary, most often the time, gives you the space to challenge yourself and grow. So I would always encourage people to take on opportunities that come their way.
Amazing. I'll say we've got two more questions and we'll end the podcast here. Is one, if you could tell your younger self something now, what would you tell them?
Oh, that's a good question. What would you tell yourself?
I would tell myself not to give up, because at one point, life, and again, I'm not going to go through this in the podcast, my life has not been the most easiest ride. It's been quite hard, very difficult, lots of challenges, mentally and physically. But I think at one point I was going to give up on this career and just completely fuck it off. Hey, see, I turned around with the old swearing like earlier. And just fuck it all off, because I didn't think it was going to work for me. I think I was too ambitious about what I wanted and what I wanted to do. But I think I would just tell myself, don't. The pain's going to hurt. But the idea is to hold it in your hand, and eventually you can let it go, but just keep fighting for what you believe in. That'd be my advice to my younger self.
Great advice. I like that. Well done, mate. That's really nice. I would say, really, just continue to trust yourself. I've kind of realised I've got a knack for kind of making the decisions that are right for me. I've never looked back and thought that was the wrong decision. I don't think I've ever had that really in my life, apart from, you know, not, you know, I'll talk about the bigger things here. I've loved every job I've had, maybe apart from that one at Lidl.
2 weeks before COVID, it wasn't the most fun because it was kind of fear of getting infected.
But I've always been able to trust my instinct, and it's always worked out. And you go into situations never knowing if it's the right thing for you. And so, yeah, like, trust yourself. Continue to trust yourself, because it's going to be okay. And also just talk to people. Like we were saying, we didn't know anyone in the industry beforehand. We've done a lot of work with students trying to get into the industry, and it's great that, you know, we've been there for people. If you're interested in any advice or getting into the industry, then, you know, reach out to people who you know or even don't know, and then you're making connections yourself, right?
Uh-huh. And I guess my last question for you to finish off this lovely podcast, but if I can come up to you today and say, Nick, I've got a project, this is the project, this is the role, what would it be? What would you want that to be for yourself?
I've always wanted to work on a natural history program. That's 100% where I'm kind of aiming, I guess. Not that I've got any skills, but at some point in my life, I would love to work on, yeah, work in the natural history space, work with animals in kind of video production. That would be amazing. A second would be factual TV, but I kind of get to do that through some freelance work. And a third would probably be like entertainment, you know, something like Saturday Night TV, some kind of big broadcast entertainment show. Truth is, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what I want to do. I'm just enjoying where I'm at right now. And so I'm trying to, you know, not get ahead of myself and trying to just enjoy where I'm at.
Amazing. Well then, why don't you now let everyone know what you're up to next?
More of the same. Although I guess in a few weeks, it depends when this goes out, but I'm having the amazing opportunity to work with Global at the Paris Olympics, which I'm incredibly excited about. Sort of based in Team GB house. Creating some incredible content across all of Global's brands, really, which is a wild opportunity, and another one of the reasons why I love what I do in the industry. You can be kind of working on one thing 1 minute, and then suddenly another opportunity comes through the door. There's a few other kind of projects on the horizon that are kind of, you know, I can't talk about, but exciting nonetheless. And it's great to have those things coming up. Buzzed. The only thing I'm concerned about is time, having the time to do it all.
Of course. Absolutely. Last question. I keep adding more, but I know we haven't got very long left. Is that I talk about crew merch. Now, obviously, on set, you get a crew merch after finishing a production, and I don't think you guys do that. But is there anything you've taken home from a set, like a lanyard or a piece of, not a kit, obviously, you're not stealing kit, but you're take something home?
I'd love to take home my cameras, but I think they
they might realise. But is there anything you've taken home to remember your experience on a set or a video?
Normally, it's like, yeah, not really, because on a set, we don't really have too much, like, I guess, set dressing. And stuff we do have for, like, set dressing just goes back in the props cupboard so we can use it again next time.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of, like, you know, Global Heart merch, bottles, cups. I love my heart mug. That's great.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, it's food. It's free food in the office you get to take home. It's just a big mix of things, really. But no, like, yeah, nothing major. Something I do love when you work on big stuff that's kind of external to the office, maybe an event, is I'm just looking at my wall of wristbands and lanyards, and you can see them behind me over here as well. But, you know, I've got stuff on there from the Queen's funeral, I've got stuff on there from Summertime Jingle Bell Ball, from the One Young World Summits. Like, it's great to look back at them. No one else knows what they mean, but to look back at them and be like, that was that event that I did that on. That's quite a nice little sentimental thing. So I enjoy that.
Amazing. And now, Nick, how we end every single podcast is that we're both going to say our favourite swear word at the same time in sync, okay? So ready? After three. One, two, three. Cunt! And it's just me. That's fine. Perfect. Thank you, Nick. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast, mate. I hope to see you very again soon and look forward to all your achievements in the future.
Oh, wonderful. Thanks for inviting me on. It's been a wonderful discussion. And, well, let's catch up soon.
Fantastic. Thank you, buddy.